Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know that our best interviews are often highlighted right on the main screen? If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
Neil Soss joins us, folks. First, though, Bloomberg Surveillance brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Time to consider a stock alternative. Visit Sector, SPDRS.com. Call them at 1-866-SECTOR-ETF. Neil Soss with us, just back from Europe. Anecdotally, Dr. Soss, what did you see in Europe?
Well, there's a certain amount of process fatigue or austerity fatigue in Europe. They've been fighting this crisis for several years now, and it's getting a little hard to mount the enthusiasm to think that you've got a solution, you can implement it, and things will be squared up within a visible horizon. It's actually a very dangerous phase in prolonged negotiations. We saw it in Latin America from time to time in the 80s, and I think that's what you're seeing, and I think it manifests itself, among other things, in these elections.
There are, in any advanced economic chapter on game theory, five or six game theories. We generate about a game of chicken, but there are nuances to that. What is the nuance in Greece or Portugal this morning if the people have spoken? How do elites adapt given this tone and this vote? How do they adapt when they speak, either Greece to Germany or Germany to Greece?
Well, the reality cannot be avoided. There is a standard of living that was achieved, but it was borrowed rather than produced. And you can't borrow it anymore because the lenders are not willing to lend it on the same terms. So there's no getting around the reality that you have to reform and adjust and all those other euphemisms that economists use for tightening your belt. You can't avoid that. So how do you make that bitter pill go down a little more comfortably? And I think part of it is through a sense of shared sacrifice. I hate to sound like a certain candidate here in the States. I don't mean to be partisan in that respect, but the sense of sharing is, I think, a necessary component of this.
Well, so when the new president of France says he can be less austere and promote growth at the same time, should we take his word for it?
Well, it sounds good.
Well, yeah.
But how exactly do you do that? How exactly do you get your budget to be tighter and looser at the same time? So, you know, when Governor Carey, for example, may rest in peace, years and years ago, back in the 1970s, had to confront New York with a very analogous problem, he was very straight up. He said, the days of wine and roses are over. And his leadership made it possible to implement that program. And there was no getting around it, because the reality was that you couldn't have the standard of living that you'd had before until you'd pulled up your socks.
Where is the leadership today in Europe?
Well, that is, of course, part of the issue. Who has that kind of mandate? Who has that kind of popularity? And it may turn out, ironically enough, that a fellow like Hollande, when confronted with the realities of implementing policy, will be able to speak a language that is more shared than his predecessor. It may turn out that he has the ability to lead in this direction to a greater degree.
One of his early jobs in the Mitterrand government was helping the government nationalize banks. Are we in for a replay of that?
I wouldn't expect so, necessarily. It strikes me that, to a very significant degree, the banking systems in Europe are on public life support already. You know, the three-year money that's coming to them from the central bank, the discussion of how they will recapitalize themselves, whether with the funds from their own sovereign or with a European-wide fund to recapitalize banks. And, of course, Europe traditionally has always relied more on banks than the U.S. The U.S. has relied more on markets. And in Europe, those banks have been aligned with the state for a very long time.
Neil, how about the United States? You guys at Credit Suisse developed a wonderful chart 6 months ago showing potential glide paths of our unemployment rate. Which line on your chart did you get right?
Well, regrettably, we got right the one that shows that the labor force continues to shrink and unemployment is falling, but in some sense falling for the wrong reasons. The fraction of the adult population that's working is continuing to disappoint, and so forth. None of this is consistent or conducive to the idea that the potential GDP of the U.S. is as big as we thought it was before the crisis and the recession.
Neil, within this, and it was the argument of the weekend, I would suggest, on Friday, I should say, within this, this debate over the labor participation rate being constructive and that people are retiring, so we're seeing better job formation, and those that say baloney, it's structural, and the labor force participation rate suggests the real angst of so much of America. Who's right?
Well, I would score it something like one-third right and two-thirds baloney. That is to say, some of the decline in the participation rate is, in fact, associated with the aging of the population. A larger fraction of all the adults in America are over 65, and that number is bound to keep going up, and labor force participation at those ages is just, as an average, lower than at younger ages, and that biases these numbers. And we really ought to have something like the old Boskin Commission that looked at the CPI a long time ago. We ought to have a commission like that to redefine the labor market statistics to take that piece out, because it's misleading. But the labor force participation at younger ages is nothing to write home about either, and that's not good. And that's not just statistical. That's a reflection of something that's not functioning well in the economy.
Well, Neil, if leading-edge baby boomers can go ahead and enter retirement and get Social Security or a pension, what do younger people do who have left the labor force?
Awful lot of them wind up as disabled. And the disability piece of that Social Security system, remember we call it OASDI, Old Age Survivor and Disability Insurance, that's Social Security. Those are separate trust funds, and it's the disability trust fund that is shrinking away very rapidly because that is the exit strategy, particularly for young men, prime-age men.
Does that mean it's easier to get disability than it used to be?
Probably that's true, but I think it's probably the case that when a prime-age male spends a lot of time out of work, they spend a lot of time watching TV and drinking beer and getting backaches.
Well,
and I think there's a certain amount of legitimacy to it.
It takes money for that. Is this partially, we were talking to Charles Murray when his new book came out, is that part of the reason that there's an income disparity?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and it's aside from everything else, it's such a waste of human potential. Forgetting the economics of it, which is itself bad enough, but just the human potential to have these young men sitting home doing nothing, and then, in some sense, being consigned to that for life because of disability.
So in our modern era, whether it's Greece or Germany or the unemployment of Spain or maybe even the modern Asia capitalism or what we're experiencing here, Neil, is it nothing more than an incredible effort to avoid wage deflation, either real wage decline or nominal top-line wage decline?
It's an effort, I think, to avoid facing up to one of the dimensions of globalization. And that is that when you add a tremendous new competitive force to the labor market, courtesy of China, India, South America, and so forth, the first world's workers who had once upon a time enjoyed a scarcity become less scarce and they have to get cheaper. And we didn't want to face that, so we gave them credit cards and subprime mortgages, or we gave them a lot of public programs, borrowed public programs, in Europe. And we should have faced it earlier, and that's easy to say. But now we're in some sense being caught up short.
You were way out in front on this, Neil, and I'm going to give you credit for the first time I heard the phrase ring fence.
Yes.
How do you ring fence Greece?
Well, it's a little late in the day for that, strikes me. I think that could have been done on day one, and I think the whole point about ring fencing, it's very rarely actually implemented. It's talked about, and then the authorities sort of don't quite get to it, and by then it becomes a little too late. I think the issue now is being analyzed a little bit by analogy with what happened here in the States as being an issue of capital, talking about recapitalizing banks and so forth. And, of course, the analogy there is our TARP program. TARP was originally described as a way of buying assets that were hard to finance But in fact, it was never used for that purpose. It was used to put in capital to the banking system. And I think that's probably part of what has to happen in Europe now.
What should be the response of Secretary Geithner and the president to what we saw this weekend?
Well, you know, this is the first crisis of confidence in our lifetimes, yours and mine, that the U.S. has not really provided a leadership role. You know, when Latin America hit the skids in the 80s, or the Asian crisis in the 90s, or the tequila crisis in the mid-90s, the U.S. provided a leadership role, organizing the discussion, putting up some money from time to time. The U.S. is notably absent, and that's, of course, because we've got our own issues. So what they ought to be doing is perhaps trying to figure out how to provide some leadership, but it's hard to do when you've got $1.25 trillion dollar budget deficit and a fiscal cliff that you don't want to go over.
Let's leave it there, Neil Sauss. Thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it. Terrific perspective, and great to have you back in the States.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.